List? He braced himself, hand on the staircase banister. Instead of catching him in a hug, however, she circled him, thrusting her hands deep into his pockets with bossy movements. Her hands were full of small, round mysteries, and she stuffed them in every possible place, jamming him in the ribs and chest. "Sweetmeats for the girls," she explained, seeing his baffled expression, "so you don't return empty-handed." He could only stare at her. "You could have warned me you were leaving," she chided. "You should at least have warned them. Soothing their feelings wasn't easy, but I told them they must expect your absence from time to time. You're a duke's heir, an important man with duties and so forth." Once she'd deposited her candies on his person, she stood back and smoothed his lapels. "I taught them a song while you were gone. It's a sea chanty, but I took out the crudest parts. They're eager to sing it for you."
"I don't want to hear it."
"Perhaps tomorrow, then."
"No, not tomorrow either, nor the day after that. I'm not going to applaud their songs or stuff my pockets with candy and gifts."
"It's only a song and some sweetmeats."
"You know very well it's more than that."
Irrational anger built a blaze in his chest. He'd exiled himself for a week to break these ties, only to return and find she'd been undermining him all the while. How dare she lead Rosamund and Daisy to believe they could be a family? If he must hurt them, better it be now than later. The last thing he needed was Alexandra building up their hopes, or his hopes, for that matter. He caught her by the arms.
"I have never made Rosamund or Daisy promises, not one. Now you've made them in my stead, setting them up for disappointment. If those girls get their hearts broken, no, when those girls get their hearts broken, it will be your fault, Alexandra, not mine."
He expected her to wince, shrink from him, wounded by his words. Instead, she tilted her head and surveyed him with curious eyes. "Are you feeling well?"
"I'm fine, and I meant every word I just said."
"You don't look well. Your face is rather pale. Are you fatigued from the journey?"
"If I'm exhausted, the journey has little to do with it. I'm bone weary of having this conversation over and over again."
She pressed the back of her hand to his cheek. "You're feverish."
"I'm not feverish, for God's sake."
Chase supposed his face was flushed with heat. And maybe her face had gone wavy at the edges. Perhaps his iron grip on the banister felt essential if he wished to remain standing. But all those things were entirely due to anger, not illness. "Chase," she said tenderly, looping her arm through his. "I think you should go upstairs and lie down. I'll bring you some tea."
"Stop fussing over me."
He shook off her arm and tromped up the stairs at a great cost of effort. Someone seemed to have painted this staircase with treacle while he was away.
"Haven't you been paying attention at all? I'm infuriated with you."
"Of course you are," she crooned.
"Good God! What would it take to get this message across? Did she need it spelled out in maritime flag signals?"
He stopped on the landing of the staircase, out of breath.
"Don't want you here. Don't want them here. Going to put a sign on the door tomorrow. No females allowed. Not even doll ones."
"No females whatsoever. That might interfere with your plans for the Cave of Carnality."
"You interfered with my plans for the Cave of Carnality. Another thing I hold against you."
Their amused little smile made his head swim with frustration.
"This isn't serious, Alex. I am being funny."
"Oh, indeed.
God damn it."
None of this was coming out right. His brain buzzed like a hive of wasps. His whole body hurt.
"Stop looking at me in that way," he growled.
"In what way is that?"
"As if you care."
"I do care."
"As if you expect me to care in return."
"Don't you already?"
"No!"
He released the banister, drew to his full height, and marshalled all his remaining strength into making one last stand.
"Come, Michaelmas, the girls are going to school. You will be leaving my employ. I will bid all three of you farewell, and we will carry on with our separate lives. No attachments."
He let the words fly like missiles. Gunshots, arrows, meteors, comets. Dried peas launched through a hollow reed. Anything hurled far and fast enough to wound.
"And our little lessons downstairs, those are through. We are through. I don't know what kind of dream you sold yourself on, but it's time to wake up. Nothing has changed. Nothing."
He despised himself for putting it to her so viciously. But apparently it needed to be done. Any alternative would have been crueler on balance. "There now." He dragged air into his lungs.
"I hope we understand each other."
She nodded. "I think we do."
"Good."
And then, to put an ironic punctuation mark on this little speech, Chase staggered 2 steps sideways and fainted at her feet.
Chase? Alarmed, Alexandra shook him by the shoulder. Chase!
No response other than a low mumble, something about sheep and manure. She loosened his cravat.
Good heavens, he was burning up.
His breath came in shallow rasps. He was even more ill than she'd thought. Alex surged into action. What with waking the house, calling for physicians, boiling water for tea, and dragging some 15 stone of weakened, feverish man to his bed, the next few hours passed in a rush. The following days, however, they slowed to a snail's crawl. The longer Chase remained ill, the further Alex slipped toward madness. The nature of her relationship with the master of the house was, she hoped, a secret to everyone but the two of them. She didn't have an excuse to visit Chase's bedchamber, let alone sit by his sickbed and keep a nightly vigil, as she yearned to do. Neither could she use the excuse of bringing the girls in to visit. Too much risk of contagion. The situation served as a painful dose of reality, a reminder of her true status in his life. She'd fancied herself to be something more than just another of his illicit lovers, but she wasn't. Not really. Not in any way that counted now. She couldn't lay claim to him. Her only news came from overheard scraps of conversation and bits of information shared by the servants. The doctors came and went, they said. Mr. Reynaud wasn't improving. A pneumonia had settled in his lungs, and his fever hadn't broken. Alex wore a brave face for Rosamond and Daisy, but fear tightened its grip on her heart. Chase was a strong, healthy man in his prime of life, but even strong, healthy men in their prime of life could be struck down without warning. She knew that all too well. After 3 days, she couldn't bear it any longer. She waited until the house went to sleep, and then took the chance of slipping into his bedchamber. There would certainly be a maid or footman present, watching over him. On the way, she sifted through 12 pitiful excuses. Mrs. Greeley was calling, or a new poultice had been prepared, or she, the governess, had been charged with keeping watch for an hour, for some unfathomable reason in a house full of servants. To her relief, she found him alone. Alex rushed to his bedside.
Chase!
His eyelids fluttered and he moaned through cracked lips.
It's me, it's Alex!
She stroked the sweat-dampened hair from his forehead.
Sweet Lord! He was still on fire with fever!
She took a cloth from the washstand, dampened it with tepid water, and dabbed his brow and neck.
Alex.
He opened his reddened eyes, struggling to focus on her face.
Sorry, love, can't lick you, can you, tonight? I'm sick.
She laughed aloud, even as tears of relief came to her eyes. The real Chase was still in there somewhere.
I know you're sick, darling, it's all right.
She kissed his forehead. The door swung open behind her. Alex leapt to her feet and wheeled about. Mr. Barrow entered the room.
I didn't mean to intrude, she stammered. The children have been asking how he's coming along. I thought I'd...
Don't worry, no excuses needed. I know about the two of you.
She was briefly stunned. After a moment, she found her tongue.
I know about the two of you, too.
He told you?
I guessed.
I'm not surprised.
He pulled up a chair, and they sat next to one another at the bedside.
You're clever. And he's not very good at hiding it when he cares for someone.
No, he isn't. And you're too promising a solicitor to take this post without a compelling reason. No one would remain in Chase's employ unless they were either desperate for work or cared too much about him to leave.
So what's keeping you here?
Her voice was quiet but steady.
Desperation? Or love?
To be honest, I've been asking myself the same question. A bit of both, I think.
Chase had lapsed back into a fitful sleep. His rattling breaths were an unsettling accompaniment to their conversation.
He isn't getting better, is he?
She asked. Mr. Barrow exhaled heavily.
No. Much as I hate to even countenance the idea, the lawyer in me is cruelly pragmatic. We may need to prepare for the worst.
A painful lump rose in Alex's throat.
What would happen to the girls?
For the time, they'd pass back to the old Duke's guardianship, just like everything else attached to the estate. That is, until the next in line can be granted power of attorney.
They've been through so much already. To thrust them into the unknown again, just when they've begun to feel safe.
I do my best to advocate for them, but But in the end, the decisions wouldn't be mine.
I know. And it isn't only being uprooted that would devastate them. They adore him.
As do we all, he sighed. God knows why. He's such a horse's arse.
He truly is.
A hot tear spilled down her cheek. Mr. Barrow reached for her hand. All this talk will likely come to nothing. It won't go easily. At school, he was always scrapping with the other boys, most of the time in my defence. Mind, he wasn't purely motivated by brotherly love. He copied all my schoolwork. Without me, he never would have passed an exam. But he knows how to put up a fight.
Right now, he's fighting with both hands tied behind his back. Alex sat forward, determined. We have to even the odds somehow. We can't just sit by and watch.
All the usual remedies have failed. Bleeding, purging, sweating him out, starving the fever. Nothing the doctors have tried has helped.
Then we send the doctors away, she said firmly. Whatever we try, we can't possibly do worse.
He looked at her and nodded in agreement.
Very well.
Alex drew to her feet and peeled the heavy wool blanket away from his body.
We have to bring down his fever first. Cool compresses, tepid baths, and he's been sweating so much he must be miserable with thirst. We should be spooning him all the broth and tea he'll take.
I'll ask Eleanor about an aromatic poultice for his chest.
Eleanor?
My wife. Perhaps you'll meet her someday. The two of you would get on well.
He lifted Chase's head so Alex could place a cool cloth beneath his neck.
Chase and I were born only 3 weeks apart, less than 1 year after his parents married. That alone should tell you how much my natural father valued his wedding vows.
That must have been difficult for you.
Not really. I had the better half of the bargain. My father stepped forward to marry my mother and raise me as his own, with love and principles. There wasn't any affection in the Reynaud house.
Alex paused. Why are you telling me this?
Because when it comes to love, Chase has no idea what the devil he's doing. He's brilliant at caring for others. He's bollocks at letting others care for him.
Of course. Of course he was. For weeks, she'd been needling him to express love for the girls, but she'd been taking the wrong tack. Chase needed to believe he deserved their love in return. But before all that, he needed to not die. Well, she plumped his pillow decisively. He's going to be cared for now, whether he likes it or not.
Chapter 25 Chase drifted in and out of consciousness. Gentle waves lapped at his body. Fresh, cool water trickled between his lips. Soothing murmurs came and went. The scents of herbs and lemon hovered about him. And orange flowers, always orange flowers, as if he were floating in a sea of Alexandra, or drowning in it, he couldn't tell. He woke in the morning. It had to be morning, what with the light stabbing him square in the eye, to find her asleep at his bedside, head buried in her arms.
Alex? Chase?
She lifted her head.
Chase!
She pressed the back of her hand to his brow. When she spoke, her voice crackled with emotion.
Thank God!
I told you I wasn't ill.
He struggled to a sitting position. I suppose I just needed a good night's sleep. She blinked at him.
A night's sleep?
He rubbed his eyes and cursed.
Don't say you let me sleep through a full day and a half. Good Lord!
Chase, it's been a week!
A week? That's impossible!
He noted her tangled hair and the dark circles haunting her eyes.
What happened to you?
If you think I look dreadful, you should see yourself. You had pneumonia. You were burning up with fever for days. No fewer than 3 physicians waited on you. You had everyone so worried.
You needn't have been worried. I'm fine.
He scratched his jaw and found it thick with whiskers.
A week? Bloody hell.
He swung his leaden legs over the side of the bed and prepared to stand.
He could do with a wash and a shave.
Perhaps then he'd feel human again.
Don't you dare!
She laid her hand flat on his chest. You're not yet ready to stand.
I can determine that for myself, thank you.
He brushed away her hand. Planting his feet on the floor, he shifted his weight off the bed and stood. For a fraction of a second, anyhow. Then his knees buckled, and he found himself seated on the bed again, with black and white dots swimming before his eyes.
I've determined I'm not yet ready to stand.
As he waited to regain sensation in his knees, he looked around at the bedchamber's new appearance. His bed hangings had disappeared.
and the walls looked as though they'd been repapered. On closer examination, they'd been covered with sketches and letters, all of them in a child's hand. He pulled one from where it had been tacked above his headboard.
Dear Mr. Reynaud, Sam says every time you kiss Miss Montbardin, we have an outing. Please get well and kiss her soon. Yours truly, Daisy Fairfax and Millicent Fairfax. P.S. I made a drawing of a tiger, but it is not much good.
Alex peered over his shoulder. Her writing is coming along well, isn't it? Even if her spelling needs a good deal of work. I quite like the tiger. Chase's stomach twisted in a knot, and it wasn't from hunger. Alex reached for a paper at the bedside, unfolded it, and put it in his hand.
This one was from Rosamond. Dear Mr. R., Miss M. says I'm to write a letter of confession. I took 4 shillings and a naker button from your library desk this Monday last. They have been returned. I am sorry to have committed such a grievous act. Please take mercy on your wayward ward. The Tower of London is much too poorly lit for reading. Yours, etc. Sam F.
I suspect she took more money than that, Alex said, but I only caught her with the 4 shillings. I see. Oh, I must send a note to John straight away. He was here all night and he went home to sleep. He'll be so relieved to hear you're awake. Chase was confused.
John. Who's John?
Mr. Barrow.
You're on a first-name basis with my solicitor?
No, I'm on a first-name basis with your brother. Ever since we gave the doctors the boot, we've been trading the watch back and forth.
She reached for a cup. Here, take some broth. He pushed the cup away.
What are you doing?
You need nourishment to regain your strength. Perhaps I'll take the girls for ices and bring you some back. It will be some days before you can take solid food, but it would be a change from beef tea.
It's not the beef tea, he said irritably.
Damn it. Had his whole week in the country been for nothing, he'd meant to put distance between them. This was the opposite of distance. This was closeness. Intense, unbearable closeness unlike anything he'd ever known. The walls were closing in on him, with their sharp-toothed tigers and sweetly printed words.
I told you, in no uncertain terms, we'd reached the end of this, you, me, and the girls. Then I wake up to you fussing over me, feeding me spoonfuls of beef tea, drawings of flowers and tigers and pirate ships all over the walls.
He gestured angrily.
For Christ's sake, Alex! When are you going to give this up?
She stood still for a moment, and then set the teacup down with a clatter.
Why would a sea captain's daughter be afraid of boats? You asked me that the day you left, recall it?
Chase was dizzied by the swift turn of conversation.
I suppose.
I'll tell you why I'm afraid of boats. I lost my father when I was 12 years old. The Esperanza foundered in a storm. He threw a blanket over my shoulders and forced me to leave in the little captain's gig, told me to row as hard as I could. He promised to call me back to the ship once it was safe, but the ship was breaking apart already. My father ordered the crew to the jolly boat. He kept trying until the end, making certain all his men were safe, but...
She swallowed hard. As they say, the captain goes down with the ship. God almighty, how terrified she must have been.
I tried to reunite with the rest of the crew.
She shook her head.
But it was too dark, and the waves were too high. We were separated within moments, and I couldn't reach them. I called and called until I was hoarse. Perhaps they too foundered and perished. When the morning came and the sky cleared, I was alone, drifting in the middle of the ocean. A crewman on an English brig happened to see me, and they came to my rescue. Asked me how many days I waited.
Sweetheart, you don't need to.
8, she said. 8 days.
Jesus.
No provisions, only a bit of rainwater. I can't describe it. The slow crawl of time and you're dying of thirst. Every breath, every swallow, it's all you can think of. Toward the end I grew delirious, and that was a mercy. I still find myself back there in dreams. I don't imagine the boat, the storm. I only feel myself drifting in the dark. And when I wake, I'm desperate for water.
So that night, when you came down to the kitchen, she nodded.
Alex, I'm so sorry.
You don't need to pity me. I'm here, and I'm alive. So there's your answer, Chase. When am I giving up? I'm not. I did not give up on myself then. I am not giving up on you now.
She smoothed her apron.
Now, I'm going to tidy myself up, take the girls for ices, eat two of them myself, and not bring you any. When we return, I'll send Rosamond and Daisy in to visit you, and you will behave. Treat me as you like, but you will not belittle those girls for loving you. I won't allow it. And do not ever waste your breath again with more of that lost cause nonsense. Consider yourself found.
Wait. He tried to push himself to a stand again, but he'd wasted what strength he had in that first attempt. Don't go. Give me a chance to...
Oh, and by the way... She stopped at the door. While you were ill, you pissed yourself twice, just so you know.
The pirates held Chase captive, and this time there was no slipping the knots to escape. Over his days of slow recuperation in bed, he was indoctrinated in the pirate's code, fitted for a peg leg and given a gold hoop earring. God only knew where Rosamond had pilfered that from. His tea and broth were served in ship's rations, on two-hour bells. Alexandra had taught her sailors well. So well, in fact, that she never needed to join the work at all. Chase had the feeling he was being punished, and he had the feeling he deserved it. What she'd given him, however, was an excellent motivation to recover. By the fourth day, he'd had enough. If he had to listen to Daisy read that book about girls climbing towers and boys picking flowers one more time, he would go mad. When the girls came in that afternoon, they found him out of bed, bathed, properly attired, and ready to do something, anything other than convalesce.
Oh, boo! Daisy pouted. You shaved. You made a better prisoner when you were scruffy. It's just as well, Rosamond said. Now that you're presentable, you can come with us to tea.
Tea?
We're going to tea at Lady Penny's house, Daisy said. We've been 2 weeks in a row now. She's Miss Mountbatten's friend and she has a hedgehog and an otter named Hubert and a goat named Marigold and a two-legged dog named Bixby and a heap of other animals. Literally, Rosamond interjected. Literally, a heap. Today I'm allowed to pet the hedgehog if I remember my manners. Also, Miss Teague bakes the scrummiest biscuits.
She took Chase by the hand and tugged.
You should join us.
I don't believe I'm invited, he replied.
You can come, that is, if you wish.
Alexandra stood in the doorway. She was wearing that fetching yellow frock again. And he suddenly felt starved for sunshine. Starved for her company as well. You're certain? They locked eyes, and he searched her expression for hints to her true emotions. I don't want to go where I'm not wanted.
Lady Penelope would welcome you.
She worked her fingers into her gloves with short, impatient tugs. She takes in every creature that wanders past, no matter how ill-behaved. Chase knew the tone of a woman's enthusiastic invitation, and that was not it. Alex was clearly hoping he'd decline. This afternoon he'd be disappointing her hopes once again. I'll order the carriage. Chapter 26. Alex cursed herself all the way to Penny's house. Why had she invited him? She'd been so relieved to see him well and strong again, she hadn't been thinking clearly. And she'd never dreamed he'd accept. The carriage ride to Bloom's Square wasn't a long one, and they arrived before she was ready. Once Chase had helped her out of the carriage, she kept a tight grip on his hand.
Lady Penelope Campion and Nicola Teague are two of my dearest friends in the world.
I understand. She didn't think he did, not truly.
Penny and Nick, well, they're not the usual sort of ladies. They weren't among the finishing school set. If you are even the slightest bit teasing or unkind, I will rip that gold earring straight through your earlobe.
He cursed and fumbled at his ear until he'd removed it himself. She shouldn't have mentioned it.
One last thing, she muttered as Rosamond reached for the door knocker. If Lady Penelope Campion offers you a sandwich, you will eat it, and you will like it.
Why does that sound like a threat? She didn't answer. He'd learn soon enough for himself.
The door opened and Penny greeted each of the girls with sound kisses on their cheeks. Come in, darlings.
Then she noticed Chase, and Alex sent up a prayer. Please, Penny, for once, remain calm. Penny threw her arms around Chase and caught him in a hug, rocking him back and forth.
I'm so relieved to see you. I've been desperately worried ever since I heard you were ill. Alex was beside herself.
Right. Brilliant.
Come in, she urged. Nicola's already here. She's made tea cakes.
Alex held the girls back. Wait. You know they're meant to be practicing. Go on, girls. The girls curtsied. Not especially smoothly, but they were improving.
Good afternoon, Lady Penelope,
they said in a chorus of two. Rosamond, would you introduce Lady Penny to our guest?
Mr. Reynaud, may I present...
No, no, the other way around, Alex said. You ask Lady Penelope if you may present him, because she's his superior in society. And his superior in many other ways.
Alex, you know I despise that sort of thinking, Penny said. They need to learn. Their guardian wishes them to be proper young ladies.
She turned to Chase. Isn't that right, Mr. Reynaud? Rosamond began again, the promise of tea cakes outweighing her impatience with the exercise.
Lady Penny, may I present our guardian, Mr. Reynaud? Mr. Reynaud, this is Lady Penelope Campion.
Chase not only bowed, but took her hand and kissed it with devilish charm. Enchanted, Lady Penelope.
Oh, Penny sighed. You are wonderful. I knew you would be.
Etiquette lessons were left at the door. Penny's house didn't lend itself to propriety anyway. The upholstery was shredded, and the carpet pattern was medallions interspersed with tufts of loose fur. As if a one-eyed kitten wasn't mewling and climbing the draperies, a yipping two-legged dog was racing around the room on its specially made cart. Alex loved the place unreservedly. Chase was introduced to Nicola, whose reception of him was as icy as Penny's was warm. No kisses on the hand. Nick swiveled her gaze to Alex the moment he turned away and mouthed a simple, "Why?" Alex could only shrug. They all settled themselves in the parlour. The girls dashed off to the back garden at once.
Where are they going? Chase asked.
Oh, they've gone to feed Hubert his tea, Penny explained.
Hubert? He asked.
The otter.
Yes, of course, a beautiful creature, the otter.
Isn't it, though? They're so affectionate. Hubert adores Rosamond and Daisy, we all do. You must be so proud of your girls.
She lifted a plate and offered it to him.
Sandwich?
Aha! Here was the moment of truth.
This one is a new recipe of mine, Penny pointed at one half of the plate. I call it tuna-ish.
I'm unfamiliar with that.
Well, the tuna is a Mediterranean fish, and I had a letter from a cousin in Cadiz who told me it makes an excellent sandwich with a bit of soured cream. But I don't consume animals, so I made my own version. Instead of tuna fish, it's tuna-ish. The secret is in the brine.
She pointed at the other half of the plate.
And this is my usual speciality. Sham. It's everyone's favourite.
Sham.
It's like ham, only made from vegetables, or pressed together into a loaf and sliced thin. I've been told it tastes even better than the real thing.
Alex caught his eye. Do not hurt her feelings. Do not. Or I will never forgive you.
Lady Penny, that sounds delightful.
Chase said smoothly, and for a moment even Alex believed him. Thank you, I'll take two of each. In the end, he ate three of each and asked Penny for the recipes. He praised Nicola's baking and listened to her describe her latest fascination, the engineering challenges of tunnelling under the Thames. Even the hedgehog uncurled in his hand, offering her soft underbelly for a gentle stroke. He didn't commit a single act of unforgivable behaviour. With the exception of being unforgivably wonderful, perhaps. As they hugged in farewell, Penny whispered a teasing question in Alex's ear.
So, how does it feel to be falling in love?
Hopeless, Alex silently answered. It felt hopeless indeed, because it was. Chapter 27 In the office the next morning, Chase clutched his side and groaned. Barrow gave him a sidelong glance.
Is it the bank accounts?
No, it's the sham. Or maybe the tuna-ish.
I won't ask.
Good, I don't want to talk about it.
Barrow stretched his arms overhead and yawned.
You know, I've noticed that doll of Daisy's hasn't taken ill in weeks. I suppose my own bedridden state was entertainment enough.
Barrow cast a pensive look out the window. Speaking of beds, as far as I can tell, you haven't shared one with a woman in weeks either.
Oh, yes, I did finally manage a period of celibacy, didn't I? And all I had to do was nearly die.
Chase narrowed his eyes at him.
What are you on about, then? Don't tell me you're going to badger me to keep the girls.
I mean to suggest you should marry Miss Mountbatten and then keep the girls.
What?
That's impossible. Don't you love her? I think you love her. Chase avoided answering that question, and he did so easily. He'd had a great deal of practice avoiding merely thinking about that question.
It doesn't matter how I feel about her, he said. I'm not marrying ever. You know my reasons.
Yes, but your reasons aren't good. I'm responsible for my cousin's death. I refuse to replace Anthony's legacy with my own sorry bloodline. The title should have been his. He hesitated, then decided to have out with it. And if it couldn't be his, it might as well have been yours. You're the elder between us. We both have Raynaud blood.
Barrow sat back in his chair, crossing his legs. So, we're going to talk about that now, are we? We may as well.
Chase gestured at all the paperwork around them, and the immense wealth and lands it represented.
You'd make a much better duke than I will. Are you certain I can't give this to you? At least half of it.
I'm afraid not. It's all entailed.
Well, at least start embezzling or something.
Barrow chuckled.
I'll take that under advisement. I'm serious.
Chase, you're going to make a better nobleman than half the peers in England. At least you look after your dependents. You know, it hasn't escaped my attention that since we took over all this, you've asked me to establish no fewer than 6 trusts and legacies for devoted servants.
I've seen your servants. They're not devoted.
Chase sighed. Difficult to argue that point.
So I'm guessing I'm not the only bastard your father sired.
After a moment, Barrow asked quietly,
What about the girls?
I don't know. Chase covered his eyes.
It's possible they're his, but I can't be certain. Doesn't make a difference, though. I intend to provide for them. School, dowries, trusts.
So you can care for all your father's bastards, but not a family of your own?
Bloody hell, Barrow, I don't care for all his bastards. It's just money.
Barrow's face went hard.
Oh, really? That's not what I meant.
Chase cursed his thoughtlessness.
But this is a perfect illustration of the point. I am shite at caring. Friendship maybe I can manage, but guardianship, family, absolutely not.
After Anthony was killed, I took his body home to Belvoir. I'd sent an express in advance with the news, but somehow it hadn't yet arrived. My uncle only learned of it upon seeing the body.
Do you know what it looks like when a person's heart breaks right in front of you?
Barrow shook his head.
Well, I do. And I never want to see it again.
They were silent for a minute.
Chase, when you love someone, there's always a chance you'll hurt them. But if you let them go, hurting them isn't a possibility, it's a certainty. I watched that woman spend night and day by your bedside while you lingered near death.
He arched an eyebrow.
You pissed yourself, you know, twice.
Yes, I heard that, he said irritably. Thank you for bringing it up again.
Alexandra's in love with you. If you can't find it within yourself to love her back, then you'd better make that very clear sooner rather than later.
Chase nodded. As always, his annoyingly smug brother had the right of it.
I've promised them an outing to the British Museum tomorrow. I'll speak with Alexandra at the first opportunity.
After a mere 2 minutes in the Egyptian room, Alexandra knew this outing was the most brilliant idea she'd had all summer.
Look at them,
she nudged Chase's arm.
Have you ever seen those girls so happy?
Of course they're happy, he replied, sounding markedly less enthusiastic about it. Daisy is surrounded by death, mummies stacked 3 to a case, and even Rosamond couldn't dream of this much plundered gold.
Just think of the educational benefits.
Daisy pushed up her spectacles and bent over a label on the glass case of an intricately carved stone coffin. She sounded out the word syllable by syllable.
Sarcophagus. Come look at this,
Rosamond waved her sister over.
Before they wrapped the baby, they took the organs out and stored them in golden jars, she pointed. This one's for the brain. It says here they pulled it out through the mummy's nose. Ooh.
Alex turned to Chase.
You can't deny that they're learning.
He only shook his head in response. Secretly, Alex agreed with him somewhat. She too hoped the girls would develop other interests with time, or if not other interests, at least less morbid and criminal applications of them.
Maybe go on to the South Seas curiosities,
Rosamund asked.
I want to see the maps and things from Captain James Cook.
You may go ahead of us, Alex told her, if you mind Daisy.
We'll join you in a moment.
And no running.
Once the girls had left the Egyptian room, Alex manoeuvred toward a quieter corner between the galleries.
We should talk.
I've been thinking the same.
The summer's drawing to an end.
He nodded. And so is our arrangement.
Yes. She lowered her voice. Promise me one thing, if you will. Wherever you send them to school, don't make them stay there over school holidays. If you won't have them at your house, send them to me. I stayed at school every holiday for years, and it was misery.
Surely you didn't stay every holiday.
Where would I have gone? I had no family. There was one year another schoolgirl invited me to summer with her family at their country home, but in the end, it didn't come to pass.
She didn't tell him the rest of the story, that the schoolgirl, Violet Liddell, had spent weeks describing all the wonderful things they would do together that summer, picnics and buying ribbons in the village and staying up all night giggling. Alexandra had dreamed of it every night for months, imagining all the adventures she and Violet would have together. What she looked forward to most wasn't adventurous at all. Family dinners. When the term ended and Violet's parents came to collect her, Alex was waiting outside with her trunk, dressed in her best frock and beside herself with excitement for the journey. She waited to be introduced to Mr. and Mrs. Liddell, but that introduction never came. Instead, Violet turned to her with a cruel smile and said, "I hope you have a fine summer, Alexandra." And she climbed into her family's carriage and left. Alex would never forget the shame of lugging her trunk back up to the attic dormitory one step at a time, while the other schoolgirls stood by laughing. They'd known what was coming. They'd all known.
"Just promise me," she said, "Easter, Christmas, summers, don't leave them there. They need to feel that they have a home."
"Blast,"
Chase muttered, turning toward the wall.
"What is it?"
"I spied someone I know and don't particularly like."
"Where?"
Alex turned her head.
"Don't look," he hissed. "I'm hoping you didn't notice me."
She returned her gaze to what lay in front of her.
"I'm hoping no one notices we're staring at a blank wall."
"Very well, have a look. But be casual about it." At the far end of the gallery, the shorter fellow compensating by means of an absurdly tall hat.
Alex turned in place, trying her best to look aimless about it, although she wasn't certain it looked better to be aimlessly turning in circles than to be staring at a blank wall. As she completed her circle, she caught sight of the man Chase had described. Her stomach churned.
"Tell me he's not looking this way," Chase mumbled.
"He's looking this way."
Which meant Alex wanted to pick up her skirts and sprint in the opposite direction.
"Reynold?"
The voice carried from the other end of the gallery.
"Chase Reynold, is that you?"
Chase cursed under his breath.
No escaping it now.
He turned and raised his hand in a half-hearted greeting. "That's Sir
Winston Harvey."
"You know him?"
"I set the clocks in his house for 3 years."
"Then you know he's insufferable."
Her skin crawled. "Oh, yes." In the distance, Sir Winston began taking leave of his current conversational partner, the quicker, presumably, to make his way down the length of the gallery to them.
"I'll go to the girls," Alex said. "They've moved on to the Grecian marbles."
"No, stay."
He tugged her to his side, drawing her hand through his arm.
"If you're here, he won't regale me with tales of his sordid brothel adventures. He seems to think I'll be impressed."
"I'd rather go with the girls."
"What did he do?"
He must have caught the tense note in her voice.
"Tell me."
"It was mostly just leering," she whispered. "A pinch or two, you know, the usual."
"The usual?"
"The usual for him. Chase, it was years ago. He won't even recognize me. Just let me go."
But it was too late. The man was upon them now. No escape. Chapter 28. Chase had never been one for committing acts of violence. He wasn't opposed to a bit of vengeance, but somehow the opportunity had thus far eluded him. He always seemed to show up too late after the damage was already done. That was not the case today.
Reynaud, you old cur! Haven't seen you about the clubs much of late.
Sir Winston's attention slid to Alex, and he raked her with a lecherous gaze.
Good to know you're still in fine form. Who's this?
I'm just the governess, Alex quickly volunteered.
You're not just the governess, Chase corrected. You're not just anything.
Well, of course she's not just the governess.
Sir Winston gave him an unsubtle wink.
They never are they?
Chase clapped the man on the shoulder, as if in appreciation of a good joke, and then, turning his back to the room, he drove his fist into the leering blackguard's gut. Sir Winston's hat skittered across the floor. The man himself was doubled over and groaning.
What the devil was that for, Reynaud?
You owe Miss Mountbatten an apology.
An apology for what?
For insulting her today, to begin, and for taking liberties with her in the past.
In the past? For God's sake, man, what are you on about? I've never laid eyes on the chit in my life.
Alex ducked her head. Evading the gaze of the other museum-goers, she murmured, I told you we wouldn't remember.
But since you mention it,
Sir Winston said jovially, I wouldn't mind knowing her. When you're done with her, send her my way.
The man reached to pick up his hat. Chase stomped on it. He held the man's gaze as he slowly and meaningfully lowered his boot, crushing the tower of felted beaver to a fuzzy burnt pancake. There, you bastard. Try compensating with that. Apologize to Miss Mountbatten. He growled the words through clenched teeth. Or by the gods of the Egyptians, I will pull your brain out through your nose and stuff you in that sarcophagus for the next 3,000 years. Sir Winston knew when he was bested. He straightened and bowed.
My apologies, Miss Mountbatten.
Mountbatten.
Miss Mountbatten.
Once they'd watched that bit of human refuse depart the gallery, they collected the girls and left the museum. Rosamond and Daisy protested the hasty departure. While they waited on the carriage, Chase bribed them with oranges from a boy selling them on the street. At home, the girls raced upstairs to mummify Millicent. Chase strode into his study. Alexandra followed him, closing the door after her and turning the key.
The nerve of that blackguard!
He jerked off his gloves and slapped them against the edge of the desk.
I'm sorry if he upset you.
Perhaps Sir Winston Harvey upset me, but what you did was more humiliating by far. You made me a spectacle.
Hold a moment, I'm not the villain here. That bastard deserved everything I gave him and more. My only regret is he had but one hat to crush.
It's all about your pride, isn't it? Did you pause to consider my feelings at all?
Your feelings were my foremost concern. How dare he speak to you in such a manner, as if you were my
mistress? She supplied. That was the kindest way of putting it, he supposed. Naturally, he assumed I was your mistress. She approached the other side of his desk and placed her hands flat on the top. Do you know why? Because I am your mistress. And now that fact will be all over Mayfair by dinner time.
First, you're not my mistress, he said. Second, don't worry about gossip. I highly doubt that Sir Winston Harvey will be eager to repeat the tale.
No, he won't dare say a thing about you crushing his hat. He'll save all his venom for describing me. Lord, you are so naive.
Me? You're calling me naive?
Yes, you. Chase, you are a wealthy, well-placed man, the heir to a duke. Society will forgive you anything. Women in my position are not so fortunate. We work for our living at the pleasure of the upper classes, the tiniest hint of scandal, and we are ruined. Unemployable forever. That's the way English society works.
Then English society needs to do better.
Well, unless you intend to change it by the end of summer, I'd thank you not to throw me under the wheels of a high-sprung phaeton. She crossed her arms and paced back and forth. What if word spreads that your governess is really your mistress?
You're not my mistress.
And then Rosamond and Daisy aren't accepted to school. I'm counting on that extra £200 you promised me. I have to make a life for myself beyond this summer.
As if he would let her wander off penniless to starve. You needn't worry about your wages. You know I'll take care of you.
Really? How? He'll set me up in a little house in the country somewhere, with an income and a companion, perhaps, like a mistress.
For the last time!
He came round the desk and seized her by the arms. You are not my mistress. Then what am I? Her voice quavered. What am I to you?
You're everything.
A bitter smile curved her lips. Don't strain yourself reaching for that answer.
Bloody hell, Alex, I don't know what to call it.
He pulled her close, crushing her body to his.
I just know I'll be damned if I let you go.
When Chase's mouth crushed to hers, Alex crushed right back. Equal and opposite reactions. The result was glorious. In their time together, they had shared a great many kisses. Passionate kisses, tender kisses, stolen kisses, secret kisses. But if she'd known how thrilling an angry kiss could be, Alex would have started rows with him nightly. They grappled and clutched, each punishing the other for unspoken sins. She'd missed his heat, his scent, his hunger for her, the way his hardness filled her hand, and the salt of his skin on her tongue. It had been so long. Too long. His fault. He gripped her bottom and lifted her, shoving her onto the desk. Papers and quills fell to the floor. At some point they ceased fighting each other and began fighting the space between them. They became allies in the war on clothing. Buttons were battled, laces conquered, petticoats marched north. His shirt was the final white flag of surrender, fluttering to the ground. When skin finally met skin, the heat was so searing, they gasped in unison. His greedy mouth and hands pushed her further onto the desk. He wanted her beneath him, not this time. She shifted their positions, pushing and pulling and guiding, until he lay on his back atop the desk and she straddled his waist. There, much better. She gazed down at his strong, defined torso, running her hands over muscle and sinew, then tracing all the same paths with her fingernails, lightly scraping over his skin. His hips bucked, and his arousal pushed against her belly, aggressive, impatient. Not yet. Not just yet. She bent to kiss him, running tongue and teeth down his neck over his nipples, relishing every hiss of breath and strangled groan she could draw from his body. His hands went to her hair, yanking pins from her upsweep and gathering fistfuls of the unbound locks. The sharp tug on her scalp sent a thrill racing down to her toes. He'd taken back some control, and he used it, dragging her up for a clash of tongues and teeth, and then pushing her back down his body, down and down, until there was no mistaking his intent. Fine, she would let him have his way, but she was going to take her time. She teased open the buttons of his trouser falls, one by one by one. Then she slipped her fingers inside, curling them about his cock. One by one by one. Until she drew him out, thick and ruddy and straining, and dropped light kisses down the underside of his shaft. One by one by one. He growled like a beast who was hers for the taming. He tightened his grip on her hair. Alex, you kill me. Well, they couldn't have that. Alex had never felt more powerful. To most of the world, she was small and slight and insignificant, even invisible. But right here, right now, she had this man quivering at her slightest touch, begging for her mouth. She ran her tongue all the way from his root to the tip, and then took him into her mouth. With a deep, yearning sigh, he released his grip on her hair. He arched his hips, pushing deeper. Take more of me, his body urged, and yet more. She wanted more of him, too. With a few last teasing licks, she raised her head. Hiking her skirts to her waist, she straddled his erection, trapping the rigid length between his belly and her cleft. She placed her hands flat on his chest and drew tall, rocking against him. Yes, yes, yes. His hands went to her hips, and he guided her into a faster rhythm. His hardness rubbed against her just where she needed it, pushing wave after wave of pleasure through her veins. She locked eyes with him, riding his body with emboldened desire, faster now. Her lips fell apart, and her breath rose and fell in her chest. The haze of pleasure descended on her, growing thicker and thicker until that one perfect, shimmering ray of light pierced the fog, pushing her over the edge. She rode the climax to its sweet, sweet end, and then kept rolling her hips in pursuit of his pleasure. His thighs went rigid. He was close. "Chase," she whispered, "stay with me." There was no reply, spoken or otherwise. His head had fallen back. The tendons of his neck were strained. His eyes were closed tight. He clutched her hips and set his own tempo, dragging her over his length at a brisk pace until he shuddered with release. All was quiet, save for his harsh breaths. He pulled her down to him, clasping her to his chest. His spilled seed glued their bellies together. She laid her ear to his heartbeat. "Where were you?" she asked. He sounded befuddled.
"Here, on the desk, under you."
"At the end, I mean. Every time we're together, at the end you go somewhere else. I don't know where you are, but it's not with me."
He stroked her hair. "I'm not sure what you mean."
"I'm not either."
She slipped from his embrace and climbed off the desk in an ungainly fashion. Why was it that in the prelude to lovemaking she was made of breasts and hips and confident hands, and once the pleasure was over, everything was elbows and knees? She pulled the sleeves of her frock up over her shoulders, anxious to make her escape. If he could go somewhere else, she could too. "This has to be the last time. I can't be your mistress or whatever else you wish to call it." "And I can't offer you anything more."
"I never dreamed you would."
Such a lie.
She'd dreamed of it before she'd even known his name. And she'd dreamed of it as recently as 5 minutes ago, foolishly, every time. Because he was going to be a duke. And girls like Alex, part American, part Spanish, part Ireland native, entirely orphaned, christened Catholic and working class, did not become duchesses. Girls like Alex didn't even get invited to schoolmates' homes for the holidays. They were paid too little, worked too hard, pinched in the corridor, or overlooked entirely. And they were forgotten as soon as they left the room.
Chapter 29 Chase sat at his desk with a tumbler of brandy, sorting through letters he'd received from the headmasters of England's finest boarding schools for girls. All acceptances, of course. The promise of a generous donation to the school worked wonders that way. He was at a loss for the best criterion. Academic philosophy? Popularity with upper-crust families? Proximity to London or Belvoir? By the time he'd sorted and resorted the letters 4 different ways, his quandary became clear. The question wasn't how to choose where to send them. The question was whether he could bear to send them at all. He was drawn from his deliberation by footsteps pounding down the stairs. As he watched from his desk, a figure in white flew past, dark hair streaming behind it. The front door opened and then banged shut. Either Alexandra had just bolted from the house, or a ghost was playing tricks. Chase didn't believe in ghosts. He rose and followed her, walking out the door and into the brisk night air.
"Alex?"
He turned in every direction. No sight of her. He lifted his voice.
"Alexandra!"
"I'm over here."
The voice came from the green in the centre of the square. It was only once he'd crossed the lane and run a fruitless scan of the garden that he pinpointed her location. He found her by nearly tripping over her.
"Alex, what the hell are you doing lying in the grass in your night rail in the middle of the night?"
"The comet! This could be it!"
She kicked at his boot.
"Now kindly go back in the house. You're blocking the sky."
Instead, Chase lay down on his back beside her.
"I told you, go back in the house."
"I'm not going to just leave you here."
She shivered beside him.
"As you like, then."
"If this could be a comet, don't you need the telescope?"
"Not for this part. It's a definite smudge. It's not among Messier's objects, nor could I find it in my list of identified comets. Now I need to watch it and see whether it moves in pace with the stars."
"Which bit of sky are we watching?"
"Follow the line of my finger." She leaned close and pointed her arm at the sky.
Do you see the three stars in a triangle? It's that tiny blur just above the bottommost point. Do you see it?
I think so. In truth, Chase didn't see anything other than the usual flurries of stars, but he didn't want to disappoint her. He wanted to be part of this. How much time will it take for you to be certain? He asked.
A quarter hour at least, perhaps more.
I'll make note of the time.
He opened the glass cover of his watch, gently skimming with his fingertips, to take note of the hands' positions. They lay side by side in silence for what felt like an hour.
How much time has elapsed? She asked.
Chase consulted his timepiece, feeling around with his fingers. I'm not certain. If I had to guess, I'd say about 3 minutes. She moaned.
This is so nerve-wracking.
You know what they say, a watched comet never moves. Another eternity passed. Perhaps they were up to 5 minutes now. He couldn't bear the quiet tension. I have this nightmare, he said. It comes back again and again. It's morning and I'm standing in the nursery, all of us looking down at the bed as usual. And I'm preparing to say something about the tragedy of pinworms when I realize the hand in mine isn't flesh and blood, it's wood. Then I turn and I realize I'm holding Millicent's hand and the body on the bed is Daisy's. Alexandra's hand slid into his and he squeezed her fingers tight. She's just lying there, pale, unmoving, and there are buttons on her eyes. I start shouting at her, shaking her little body, but I can't move the buttons from her eyes to wake her, and then the bed starts to change. Suddenly it's grey and uneven, the paving stones of an alleyway. There's blood pooling beneath her. I'm frantic to find the source, press my hand over the wound, but I can't. It just keeps spreading, and then...
And then?
And then I wake up, drenched in cold sweat.
Oh, Chase, I'm so sorry. That sounds terrifying.
It is terrifying. And even when I've awoken from it, and I know it's only a dream, it doesn't stop being terrifying. The fear only grows, and I know it's because... He paused to swallow hard. I know it's because I love them. She clasped his hand tight. He swore. I love those girls so damned much, Alex.
I know you do. I've known it for ages.
Yes, yes, you know everything. He gave her a nudge. The least you could do is wait until I finish spilling the entirety of my heart on the grass. Then you can gloat over it.
I am duly chastened. Please continue.
Between the fear and the fondness, it keeps getting worse. One feeds the other. The very idea of seeing them hurt, not being able to help, scares the shite out of me.
I'm fairly certain that's natural.
And it's not only the accidents and illnesses, it's everything. Rosamond's 10. What do I do if she tells me she fancies a boy? Worse! What if a boy takes a fancy to her? A fresh possibility struck him, and it was the most horrifying by far. Good God! What the hell will I do the first time she gets her courses? Alex laughed. Don't laugh, I'm being serious here. I don't trust myself to be a competent guardian. How can I? If I was someone else, I wouldn't trust me either.
Well, I trust you to be an excellent guardian. That's the honest truth. Because I love Rosamond and Daisy too, and I couldn't bear to leave them at a summer's end if I didn't trust you completely. Does that help?
A bit.
It would help a great deal more if she wasn't going to leave at summer's end.
Or if she wasn't going to leave at all.
Chase.
She clutched his arm, as if she'd suddenly recalled the reason they were lying in the grass in the middle of the square at midnight.
Has it been a quarter hour, do you think?
He felt for his timepiece. More than that.
Oh no, I've lost track of the smudge!
The sky's only so big, it can't have gone far.
Shh!
She held her breath, studying the darkness overhead.
Oh, there it is! Chasing Altair now!
She rose to her feet, leaving him sitting befuddled and alone in the grass.
Wait!
He called after her. She was halfway back to the house already.
Is that good or bad? What does Altair mean?
In Arabic, it means flying eagle.
She reached the front door and turned to answer him.
In practical terms at the moment, it means I must go to the Royal Observatory at once.
From there, the race was on.
Chase scrambled to his feet and followed her into the house. She turned to him.
Where do you think I could find a Hackney at this time of night?
A Hackney? Don't be ridiculous.